The year is 1798. The setting, Egypt. The character, Augustin Robert, a soldier in Napoleon's army, escorting an artist across the desert. The artist is tasked with painting the sights of Egypt for Napoleon's research / colonization. Augustin, in a terrible battle, is separated from his army. He and the artist wander aimlessly through the desert, slowly going mad with dehydration. The artist, an old man, already partly deranged by his task and by the injustice of watching sacred and ageless artifacts destroyed.
Painter
begins to drink his paints one by one, starting with the azure blue of the desert sky. After the artist commits a very sympathetic suicide, Augustin retreats into a sacred and perhaps accursed ruin in the desert, where he meets a leopard. And their meeting is both beautiful and terrible. He loses his humanity and gains a new appreciation for desert sensuality. He experiences a sexual awakening with this leopard. But then, how long can man and beast remain peacefully entwined in a desert oasis? Why must man assert his dominance over beast? They are doomed. And with that, we bring you Passion in the Desert.
Passion in the Desert.
A 1997 film.
Based on a novella by Balzac.
Correct. Called A Passion in the Desert.
I think the interesting thing about Saya and myself is we often find these movies that no one else has ever seen before, and this one is no exception.
Well, we shouldn't say no one else.
Well, I shouldn't say no one else. Very few people that I've met have ever heard of this movie.
Right.
And this is a common connection, and it's why we started the podcast to begin with. So this is a really great movie to just keep going along with that thread, and just a really beautiful movie.
Really beautiful and really gorgeously shot with a few heavy-handed moments, but overall...
Like our little intro there. Would you like to explain to them what we were trying to achieve?
Well, throughout the film, that sort of formless female singing
whale
morning...
Chant, wailing chant.
Is used, and Natalie was really doing a good job.
I tried my best.
Imitating that, but that music really is kind of used whenever there's a...
It's the go-to...
Egypt.
For any Egypt
or Middle Eastern
film. Often used. It's used in The Mummy. was used in Gladiator.
Yeah, which is in Italy, but we'll just say.
It works. It's fine. Just tack on the wailing chant of the woman
but
again.
But those, you know, it's all the same.
Yeah. So, I wanted to clear the air and put it out there that I wasn't trying to be culturally insensitive, but I was trying to.
But you weren't trying fun. Not to be.
Yes. Well, that's awesome. Okay. I was just trying to point out just a glaring thing that happens in films.
Yeah.
In Egypt.
I was trying to remember how I first saw this movie, and I think it was probably that my mom brought it home from the library or something, or rented
wow.
it, you know, back in the day, because it was something that she thought would be artistically interesting for her and interesting for me because it had an animal in it, and I have always loved animals and
yeah.
watched animal movies, but, you know, didn't like the cutesy animal movies or like the comedies like Benji or anything like that.
This is definitely not that ilk, sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's probably how I was introduced to this movie and watched it many, many times. Probably, let's see, how old was I in 1997? I was 14? Yeah. And watched it many times since then, but hadn't seen it for probably 8 or 10 years.
I think it's a movie that when people watch it for the first time, it's often misinterpreted as kind of a strange,
trippy, a little psychedelic,
almost with a bestiality tinge to it.
Right, because it does have a man falling in love with a leopard,
right,
and then being betrayed. But that's an anthropomorphization.
Yes. And I think we needed to shed light on this betrayal. So essentially, he's going through the...
Spoiler alert.
He's... Yeah. He's... this whole thing's a spoiler alert. So he's through the desert and going through the desert and he's pretty much completely dried out like a piece of jerky.
Yeah.
And
And he's sporting some sweet braids in his hair.
What I like to call desert braids.
Yeah,
there's a definite common theme with desert braids.
He's a very good looking man. He's got piercing blue eyes.
Yeah, there's a lot of piercing happening in this movie.
kind of like what Daniel Craig's got going on in Cowboys versus Aliens.
Just wear Daniel Craig at any time. Any film that he's in.
He's like a walking desert.
Just turns, he turns and it just pierces you. But so this man forms this connection with what I took as a djinn, which is sort of
a genie or a spirit.
Spirit type thing that is a shapeshifter and it can play tricks on you. So he encounters this leopard, which is immediately kind of just casual with him.
Yeah. And the first scene where he encounters the leopard, it's dark and he's in this ruins.
And he can hear
the... Oh, he hears the wonderful sound effects that they have for the leopard. And then it's revealed to him kind of piece by piece, like he sees like a piece of its flank.
Because there's just bits of moonlight coming in through
right,
this
which
cave.
Which gives it an enchanted feeling.
Yeah.
And then you see its eyes.
It's glowing green orbs of eyes just in the darkness.
And he is just paralyzed with fear and just shaking up against the side of this cave that he's in. And
then they just pull out and it's like the leopard is mere feet away from him.
Yeah.
And just comes up to him and it's just like, I'm just going to paw your legs and I'm going to walk over here. Okay, bye.
Yeah. So the leopard is just completely the master of its domain.
Yes.
And he comes into its domain and for a reason that we could analyze, the leopard doesn't just eat him because, as we see later, the leopard pretty much just eats everything else.
Comes. And you know, he's being chased by a lot of different people. And in the next morning after this first encounter, the leopard does attack another man,
a Bedouin like warrior
yes,
who's coming to kill
this French soldier,
the French man.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of it's in and of itself just shows you that there's already this sort of, is it preternatural connection? Is that
right,
the right way to say it? And it falls into the tagline of the movie, which was...
What nature divides, the spirit unites. And
it's
what,
a little... okay.
It's a little pat.
Yeah.
Maybe. little easy. But what is your analysis of why... why is he in this situation? Like, we don't know anything about him. He comes into this other place. He's a foreigner, you know, stranger in a strange land. He comes in, and for some reason, this, like, spirit of the land decides to befriend him. Is it a test of his morality, or is it a metaphor for the conquering and the colonization of by Napoleon? You could say that.
Oh, definitely. You could definitely say that. And I think the reason why we didn't get a whole lot of background in his character is because you don't really need to have it.
Yeah.
Because you can kind of insert anything in there. Like, I think the point of the film is you're trying to insert yourself.
He's any soldier.
Right.
He could just be anybody.
Right. And this sort of, like, this war that's just happening around him and just becoming absorbed by the land instead of going and... Because it doesn't seem like he is a genuine soldier. Like, he is compassionate.
He very easily succumbs to the sort of spirituality of the place where he is.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that might also have held the fact that this leopard was kind of his savior in some ways as well. But,
right.
No, I think that's a very astute point.
Thanks.
I liked the sort of idea of them connecting spiritually. I honestly, the when it became sensual and like a male female dynamic,
right.
That was kind of a weak end of the movie for me, to be perfectly honest with you. Because what happens is the leopard is in heat, and so she attracts a male leopard. And he immediately is, like, watching this happen, and you can sense, like, you just see it. The actor is brilliant.
He
says not
a
word, and his
actor.
Face goes from, like, shock to just hardened to betrayal.
Well, and there's a moment where it almost looks like he's happy for the leopard that,
right.
that she's happy with this other leopard, but then his face falls into... She's abandoned me.
Like in a realization. Right.
And one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when he's like dancing around the leopard and giving her these names. And all of the names are like, you know, Old Testament, biblical names of these powerful women like Isis,
yes,
Salome, Sheba, Josephine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the moment, that's the beginning of the end for their relationship, because he starts to sexualize this creature and she's just like, you know, so in a way above him every way on the food chain, just spiritually.
She is just, it's a sense of just being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it was at the beginning. It was, it's just an existence here. You know,
it's
very
idyllic.
Simple and pure.
Perhaps we could relate it to Adam and Eve in the fall.
Yep. Yeah, you definitely can.
And then there's a the scene where you really cringe is when they're laying together and he starts to lick her fur.
Oh, it's...
And it's really quite good, but it's also, you just don't...
The director was perfect. It was wonderfully shot, and I really liked the intimacy of that moment, because you're just like, wow. Like, they have
He's
both,
going there.
They've both been enveloped in each other,
mm-hmm.
and you're just like, okay, and it just seems like something that any person connecting to an animal might do, but when it gets to the licking,
mm-hmm.
that's when you're just like, someone's crossed over.
Appropriateness not being considered. Yeah.
Okay. And then that lasts for mere seconds, and then it's cut off. But going back to my point of his betrayal with the male leopard, and I thought was cringeworthy was when she's frolicking and with this male, because you know it's an animal, she needs to do these things, and she finally comes back to him. Where have you been?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know,
just leoparding around. That's where she's been. God.
And I think there's a couple heavy-handed moments, that one in particular. And then also there was a scene where she took him to a kind of further away cave where there were some cave paintings.
And there's a leopard and a man and
there's
a
there's like a handprint.
Yeah.
That's on there. And there's like a drawing of a leopard putting its paw in the handprint.
Yeah. The art, the people who were doing the sets got a little carried away with that. subtlety. But you know, this movie, the you know where it's filmed, it has so many scenes that just really are breathtakingly beautiful. And that one of my favorite other scenes is when he first gets to the watering hole that she is guarding, and this is before they are sort of friends. And she is just like sitting by this watering hole and looking up at him like, "Bitch, I will let you drink in my own damn time." And well, he is so thirsty. And she will not let him have any water.
Every attempt he tries to get to this watering hole, every other, like, cranny he tries to, like, circumnavigate around, she's just there like, "Hey, are you trying to get in on this water?" "Yeah, it's good. This water's good.
I've been climbing these rocks since the day I was born."
And it's just, "Did you want some?" And then this is so great. He tries to throw a rock at her, and she's like, "That was a rock. Don't throw that at me.
I'm a leopard.
Did you forget that I'm a leopard? That's a rock." Then we make her a prissy SoCal girl. Yeah. And in the end, what happens is his other friend, he gets stranded from the rest of his French soldier buddies, the regiment, and they come around to these ruins where he's staying with this leopard in these caves and stuff, and he fashions a rope and ties her up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really gutted while doing this.
He's crying while he's doing it.
And you can see it, like, he puts it and he ties her up.
He knows it's wrong.
He says it's for her safety and he'll come back for her.
Yeah.
But again, I think this is just a little bit about, can I just say, male oppression?
Absolutely, girl. You can say that.
She's wild and free and she's doing awesome. She is at her peak.
Yep.
She doesn't need him.
Yep.
And I think, and this happens after the betrayal, I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't need you to survive. And in truth, you need her to survive.
Right.
So he ties her up, and like at first it's just really, she's just like, get this off of me. This animal is just amazing. Whatever happens to leopard actors? She was incredible. Well, this leopard was incredible.
Natalie, I have a surprise for you.
Yes?
I actually have that leopard here today.
What?
Podcast listeners, this is a surprise. I tracked down this leopard actor. She's in her late 50s. That's actually what the leopard sounds like.
But what I was trying to get to was that she tries to free herself from this rope much more vigorously, and you can just see the power of this. Just the
she transforms from gentle to wild.
Incredibly wild.
And then she takes her revenge.
Yeah. As soon as that rope snaps, he sees it. He turns and he's like, "Oh, fuck."
Yeah. And he starts running.
"You made a mistake."
Yep.
And she attacks him, and she really lays into him and just gnarls all over his body. And I want to, before we get to the actual ending, I want to correlate this to an earlier scene when he's wandering through the desert before he meets the leopard, and he comes along that camp.
Yeah.
A Bedouin camp. Mm-hmm. And inside the camp, he hasn't had water for days. Inside the camp, he goes into a tent, which he thinks is empty, and they have a water sack. And he goes in and he's just, you know,
perhaps a goat bladder.
A goat bladder, sure. He's gorging himself from the water of the goat bladder. And he's like falling to the ground. And right by there is a woman just beautiful.
And the first thing you see is her foot, which is henna tattooed.
Tattooed. And so beautiful. And you see the sort of metallic, the coin mask. I don't know what it's called. I'm doing a horrible.
She's got like a face covering on that just shows her eyes, and it's completely made out of like hanging coins. And,
incredible.
And when you first see her, you're like, what is that face?
Yeah.
Like, it looks like someone who's like weirdly deformed or something. But then the camera comes up and you just see that she's wearing this beautiful sort of mask thing. And then
a head wrap. And he says to her, like, "Don't curse me.
Don't curse me," which is like, how strange that would be his first instinct. And he is totally delusional and dehydrated at this point. And I think when he sees her, it's like this, he can't even wrap his mind around this vision.
Yes, exactly. But the thing is that I thought was interesting is they stand there and they exchange glances, they look at each other. And this happens with the leopard later on. And she reaches out and touches him, but he takes full advantage of that.
He takes off her mask.
Just rips the mask off. And she's startled and tries to get away. And he grabs her by the hair and cuts that hair.
That's a strange moment because why does he cut her hair off with Samson?
Desert braids.
Yeah, don't cut off anyone's desert braids unless you want to be cursed by a gypsy. That's all we're saying.
That set it up for the sort of male-female reaction.
Right.
This is someone who was trying to help him. She didn't scream initially.
Well, he doesn't even give her a chance to help him. It is kind of like an encounter with this other that he can't even...
Yeah.
He can't finesse it at all.
But I think if she didn't start screaming, that he would have gone further.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely get that sense, like, he needed to dominate this situation.
Yeah.
And I feel like cutting the hair was also part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, taking something of hers.
Yeah.
And to follow that up with, in the end, when he is with the leopard, and, you know, the leopard has been freed from the tether, and eventually he pulls out his saber and mm-hmm. stabs her.
Right.
And immediately the regret.
Because she's attacking him, he's defending himself, but really, he deserved to
die. He needed to have his face chewed.
He did.
And that would have been a fitting end.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I see that ending as another kind of mirror image of the political theme of the movie, which is,
mm-hmm.
you know, the people who are coming in and who have no place in this land.
French soldiers in Egypt.
Are gonna, you know, I mean, that Western influence is so strong. And
which is, it's also in the rest of the movie, earlier in the movie, where they're actually shooting cannonballs at mm-hmm. a Sphinx sculpture.
Yeah.
Because, as they say,
it
was built by slaves for the aristocracy. But from the artist's point of view, it's a beautiful work of art.
Yeah.
Like, that's actually something that came out of that oppression. That's an incredible piece.
Yeah.
And you're just going to smash it because you deem that it's a symbol for oppression, I guess.
Right. Or they just are dudes who want to shoot a cannon.
Yep.
I mean, that sounds pretty cool.
When you're in the desert and you got your desert braids blowing in the wind and you just got a cannon right there, you gotta shoot at a sphinx.
I mean, all the set pieces are there. If you're not gonna shoot that sphinx,
you're not doing it right.
Men shooting sphinxes with cannons.
Since 1782. Two paws up. Oh, no.
Two animatronic leopard paws up. If this were a video podcast, I would have a leopard paw that would come up from the bottom of the screen and grope Natalie right now.
Get off me! Oh, my. Okay, well, hopefully you liked hearing us talk a little bit about passion and sensuality in the desert with a leopard. Where only the leopard can roam free in the ancient ruins and make a spiritual connection with those open.
Desert yodeling, yay! Oh.
Actors.